Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, and many others. Thanks for downloading us. We have a wonderful guest for you for a difficult subject. When Your Child is Sick, a guide to navigating the practical and emotional challenges of caring for a child who is very ill. It's a remarkably well-written book, but you would expect that because Johanna Breyer is accomplished in this field. I could give you her background, but she started work with children with cancer and their families. And in 1983, she's done it for over 25 years at the famed Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston and Children's Hospital in Boston. And for the last 10 years at the David B. Perini Quality of Life Clinic for Survivors of Childhood Cancer. The expertise you'll see will come through very easily. This is podcast number 901B, When Your Child is Sick. Dr. Breyer she says, an amateur at this. So don't worry, Dr. Breyer, I'm not going to scare anyone away. But who was this book intended for? Was it intended for the parents of people who get cancer or family members, or who else was it intended for?
It's intended for parents of children who get very sick. Most of my experience is working with children with cancer and their families. So it's for, but many of the sort of experiences and the points I make, I think, are relevant to children with other kinds of serious conditions too. Absolutely intended for parents and families, I mean, other family members of these children. And I think it's also supposed to honor the families and the children whom I worked with over the years. It's helpful to future parents. Yeah.
So let me go and ask you, we're seeing, if you will, three and sometimes even four generation families. And I don't know if the experience is the same, but when a parent loses a grandparent, or when someone is, how is that different, do you think, from a parent who's caring for a grandparent versus a parent who's caring for a child losing a sibling? In other words, we're supposed to die in order, if you will. So I think that I can't think of anything quite as devastating as a parent losing a child.
And it is out of order. You're absolutely right. You expect your parent to die before you. And the one thing you don't expect and dread is your own child dying.
And so this obviously is there a lot of guilt in the family? And how does one start to deal with the guilt of, what did we do wrong?
I think with something like cancer, it's very easy to not feel guilt. And certainly all of the doctors and the medical caregivers would be encouraging the parents not to feel guilt. Childhood cancer is not a discriminator. It hits diverse people randomly often. Sometimes there may be a genetic component, but most often not. I'm not sure that guilt would be what I would put highest on the list of things that most parents, who at least whom I met, encountered, felt.
And so what is their feeling? What is their lead feeling? There is a number of areas of of promoting resilience in the book, such as coping techniques, breathing and relaxation, distraction and affirmations, imagery and self-hypnosis that you go through. But what is the lead feeling that causes this, that causes the problem in adults? I mean, I can't think of anything more devastating, but I think I'd feel, and I obviously haven't experienced this ourselves, thank God, but were I to experience it, I would feel guilt. So what would other people feel? Obviously, that's a medical professional saying that.
I think, first of all, you know, most children now who get cancer live. You know, almost over 90% in some, given some cancer diagnoses. And so it's, you know, I think many parents fear to begin with that they will be faced with their child dying. But in fact, most of them will not be faced with that. I think that they feel huge anxiety. They feel uncertainty. They feel they don't quite know what's going on, and they have to begin with rely very much on the doctors to tell them, because they've moved into a new world like the hospital. But I think it's a learning process for every parent, as it would be anybody, for anybody going into this situation. But, you know, how they can get their child to feel more comfortable in this sort of strange new world that they're having to spend an ordinary amount of time in. But it's not so much. They may feel guilty that they can't spend much time with their other children. That's quite often, the siblings are often a group I talk quite a lot about, who do often feel sort of neglected and confused and really not knowing what's happening, which is completely understandable. Parents are being pulled in lots and lots of different directions. I'd say more anxiety, confusion, and worry. I would put higher than guilt on the list of things that at least I've experienced parents as feeling.
And you talk about some of the things that a hospital or that individuals can do, and you give examples of what I would call ideal hospital settings, but for this, talk to me about what you would, if you go to a hospital that is not set up for, or are almost all of the pediatric hospitals now set up to try and handle this for the family and to try and integrate the child into the hospital?
Certainly, I mean, the hospitals that I've gone to, which are, you know, pediatric oncology or a child-focused hospital, absolutely sort of does all it can to make the parent feel comfortable in that setting, and to help the child get used to medical procedures that they have to go through. And I mean, obviously, there are ways that can help things go more easily. I mean, yes, I think a lot of children's hospitals now in America have, you know, come a long way since the time when parents weren't allowed to stay in the hospitals. You know, almost most hospitals now have accommodation, either a pull-out bed or something that a parent can stay. And that in itself is a huge comfort for a child, a young child particularly, who doesn't therefore feel wrenched away from his parent.
And is one of the problems, in other words, one of the things you go through very well, is how to talk to the medical staff or parent, how to ask questions or communicating with the medical team. Talk to me a little bit about that. What should parents know about how to communicate with the team, and especially, I guess, when they first get there?
I would say, and it would depend on the hospital, because in a teaching hospital, which is the one that I was in, you know, a lot of information is given by either groups of doctors going on daily rounds, or in family meetings where, you know, different disciplines, like nursing, social work or psychology, as well as doctors might be involved. But I would totally recommend to a parent to have whichever format any information is going to be delivered in, to have a list of, to have prepared a list of questions that they want to have, you know, to have answered.
So that list of questions is key, because you will get in. I think, although I'm not sure that's the word you use, there is a intimidation and a forgetting factor, and the team will try and move
Absolutely.
On. And so you've got to write it down and maybe write even the answers down.
Absolutely. And also to ask whoever's going through it, if you want to record it. I mean, it's now very, very easy to, you know, on iPhones or whatever. I believe, I'm not so good at it myself, but I believe it's very easy to record conversations. And therefore, if you can't remember exactly what somebody said, to, you know, to play it again and to hear that you, you know, what was said. And also to, you know, to ask a nurse who may, you know, who you may have for that day, to ask her for clarification if there's something that you haven't understood.
And that's you make the point, and I think it's a wonderful point in this book. And we're talking to Dr. Johanna Breyer, B-R-E-Y-E-R, When Your Child is Sick is the name of the book. And it really is a guide to navigating the practical and emotional challenges of caring for a child who is very ill. But you also make the point very well, and this is especially true because so many of the children may have a language barrier or have a, be, if you will, of a different culture. So you have a great point about making sure that translators are available, and there, in American hospitals, those are required if you request them.
Absolutely, and if possible, to avoid having a family member be a translator, particularly if the condition is very serious, if the child is very serious, because it's sometimes terribly difficult for a family member if he or she is being asked to communicate bad news. And it's better if there can be a translator who is not related to the family.
And let me also ask about siblings, because obviously often a older sibling is used as a translator. But how do you communicate the status of the brother to a sister or brother to another brother? How important is that? When do you, at what time do you let the second child, the well child, know about the child who's got the illness?
My answer to that would be as soon as possible, because, as soon as the parents know what's going on, if they can possibly explain to the other brothers and sisters what's going on, and if they're not clear to say, we're still waiting for results, we're still but to keep them as informed and included as possible is one of my pleas to parents, because that I think helps the brothers and sisters understand that you know what is going on is serious, but there is, everybody's doing their best to find out what is going on and also what is likely to help.
Go ahead. Well, I was wondering, do many of the brothers or sisters think of themselves as going to get the same problem as their brother or sister who is in the hospital get?
That absolutely can be a problem, particularly with younger brothers and sisters. I once experienced a younger brother who thought that, because it can go the other way around, he thought that he had caused his older brother's brain tumor because they'd had a fight and the brother had fallen on his head. And it wasn't until I met with him individually, because his behavior had changed very dramatically, that we discovered you know, he told me that that's what he thought. And, you know, then obviously we were able to explain to him, and, you know, I got his permission to tell his parents and the doctor that that's what he was worrying about. And they were able to reassure him that that what he had done had absolutely nothing to do with his older brother getting a brain tumor. But it was what he'd gone along, you know, believing himself and feeling terrible inside, because that's what he believed. But so, and it can go the other way around too. So I think that absolutely is something that needs to be addressed. Yes, the idea that things, you know, that most conditions are not catchable.
So we should say that this book covers the emotional effects of a serious childhood illness, giving your child bad news and grief and bereavement, as well as, if you will, when the child becomes a adult and
when becomes a survivor, yes, of whatever that childhood condition was.
And siblings as donors for stem cell transplants, and a whole raft of other topics, including a great area for resources from foundations, organizations, and government agencies. It's all in this book by Johanna Breyer, B-R-E-Y-E-R, When Your Child is Sick. It's a guide to navigating the practical and emotional challenges for caring for a child who is very ill. You've been listening to podcast for You, the Owner's Manual podcast, number 901B. Thanks for listening. Dr. Breyer, thank you for coming on, and thank you for writing this book. It's really important. I know that it will be a great book to give family members or friends or anyone you know who has a sick child. This is a great gift that you will give them, that they will remember and benefit from, as well as the child and children will benefit from. Thanks very much again, Dr. Breyer. Ben and Darian, thank you for great engineering. We'll be right back next week with another wonderful guest. Thanks again.